Hello, everybody. Jordan here. Before you listen to this episode of Baseball Barbacast, just wanted to give you a quick heads up that we will not be covering the two blockbuster trades that went down on Friday. Kyle Tucker going to the Cubs, Devin Williams going to the Yankees. We recorded this late on Thursday night for reasons you will hear shortly on this podcast. But you will hear us talking about Max Fried signing with the Yankees, Garrett Crochet traded to the Red Sox, the Rangers making some moves, Cleveland making a couple of interesting trades. We've got a Scott Boras update. The Scobo is back. And of course, it is still Friday, so we've got the good, the bad, the ugly. So we'll get to those other two trades next week. But for now, hopefully you can still enjoy this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world cultured enough to call Garrett Crochet the Big Knit. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And you better make me a pillow.
You know, my lovely wife, Bailey, is a expert Garrett Crocheter. And I don't know. I guess I'll have to Google her or ask her what the difference between big knitting and big crocheting is. But I love the nickname, and just because it looks like a big unit typo makes it all the better for a left-hander that throws 100 miles an hour. It is so good to see you, Jake. I just saw you in Dallas. We had a great time at the winter meetings. A lot has happened since we last spoke on Tuesday afternoon, and a lot of miles have been traveled by you. So before we get it to Max Fried and Crochet and Jake Berger and Wickelman Gonzalez, where are you? Where are you?
I am in Hanoi, Vietnam, on my honeymoon. I flew all the way around the world in the last 48 hours, and I am settled here in the capital of this beautiful country, and I am very excited to see the sights. But because I am taking so much time here in Southeast Asia, I am going to continue podcasting. Over the next month, you will see me in various locales where we depend heavily on the Wi-Fi strength of hotels across this region of the world. Now, you don't really care about that. I'm going to have a great time and you should be happy for me. But this is a baseball podcast. We may get some sprinklings of my travels here in Vietnam and later when I go to Thailand. I will have some baseball in the wild presentations. That is for sure.
Yeah. You will also have some time away from this podcast. I hope people understand that this, while I very much appreciate Jake being willing to make this work over these next few weeks, she will have also time to enjoy, you know, spending time with his lovely wife and enjoy what a honeymoon is supposed to be. But also, so we'll have some guest hosts along the way. But also, I mean, the stove's still pretty hot, so you got to hop on the mic here.
Had to. Very excited for my honeymoon. My wife decided to come too, which is great. So since I was last in the United States of America, a lot has happened. I learned about the Garrett Crochet trade from 10,000 feet up in the air in the sky. Shouts out to in-flight Wi-Fi. But the Max Fried signing, and that's where we will begin, happened basically an hour after we recorded our last podcast. And so we will begin there with the opener. Max Fried signs with the New York Yankees. It is step one of the great Juan Soto pivot. Let's get into the details. For every free agent signing and trade for the rest of this winter, we're going to employ something of a template so we make sure we hit all the major points. And as I said, we will begin with the details. 8 years, $218 million. That is the fourth largest contract ever given to a free agent pitcher, and the largest contract ever given to a left-handed pitcher. It's good to see a lefty succeed. That's why I'm here in Vietnam.
That's a good joke. And also, do you know whose record he broke there for the left-handed starter?
I would imagine friend of the show, Carlos Rodon.
No, it is not friend of the show. Hopefully future friend of the show, David Price, who signed for $217 million. So you love to see the New York Yankees breaking the record held by a Red Sox pitcher with Max Fried.
Now, I want to say, when we talk about record-breaking contracts, the value with inflation of David Price's contract 10 years ago is obviously higher than it is right now. But for whatever reason, 218 feels like a record. Besides the contract, next up, player overview. Who is Max Fried? What is he good at? Drafted by the San Diego Padres out of Harvard Westlake High School in LA, where he attended alongside Lucas Giolito. Fried then moved to Atlanta in the Justin Upton trade way back in 2014, spent the entirety of his MLB career with the Braves. You've seen him in enormous spots very often in the postseason. He has the single lowest ERA in baseball since the beginning of the 2020 season. He is elite at run prevention. He strikes out fewer batters than you would want from a frontline ace making $218 million, but he's still sensational at getting the ball on the ground. He's very good at not walking guys. He took a half step back in that this year, but the track record is strong enough that I think it's more of a blip. And as a whole, like, Fried is one of the best 15 pitchers in the world. Now, is there such thing as a awesome contract for a 31-year-old pitcher? Probably not. But if you're going to pay someone this age who throws a baseball for a living, Max Fried is a pretty good choice.
Yeah, and Joel Sherman had some great reporting at the New York Post about kind of the negotiations involving Fried and how obviously after Juan Soto goes to the Mets, the Yankees, who were already interested in starting pitching, had to kind of figure out what direction they were going to go and how quickly. Of course, Snell had gone off the board earlier. Burns still out there as at the time that we're talking. But, you know, the Yankees, we look at these starting pitching deals, and you can apply this to other free agents too, but at the top of the market, you're thinking about, oh man, 7-8 years for a pitcher. Oh, what's that going to look like? The Yankees are not concerned about that right now. They have to win a bidding war for Max Fried in a hot starting pitching market right now. And that means outbidding Texas, who was reportedly offering him nearly $200 million. Boston also heavily involved. We know what they end up doing a little bit after Max Fried. And so Fried wanted the eighth season, and the eighth season is what made him a Yankee. And that is a huge commitment. Obviously, you don't see pitcher contracts handed out at this length, but that's how you get the deal done, because they're getting Max Fried. They're not concerned about Max Fried 8 years from now. They're concerned about Max Fried helping the 2025 Yankees get back to the World Series.
Last thing about Max Fried, player overview. Another member of the Jewish community moving to New York. Jordan, we might have enough guys for a minion at Yankee Stadium between Brad Ausmus, Scott Efros, and all the fans, and me, and Joel Sherman. It's the whole mishpucha is coming to New York. And if they sign Alex Bregman, what a blessing it might
goodness.
Be.
I'm quelling. Jake, Max Fried as a Yankee, first of all, like, when we went into this office, we spent so much time thinking about how the Yankees were going to get Soto or not get Soto that there is still a lot of questions about the lineup, obviously.
How much does this move the needle? It is not Juan Soto. Are the Yankees with Max Fried the favorite in the division now?
Could you have argued they already were? I think perhaps based on Baltimore's moves or non-moves. We're going to get to Boston's first big move here in a second. Obviously, they were much farther behind in this past season. Does this definitively make them that right now? Feels goofy to give any answer about that when we have so many moves ahead of us. But I think, sure. I think so. The Yankees position player group right now is not looking awesome, and this certainly does not fix that. But it's just, we're just so far away from knowing what any of these rosters are going to look like. So I'm kind of copping out here, but is this a player that could be a five-war player? And if you add that to a team that was already in a pretty good position, I don't know. I think you would default to the Yankees even at this stage.
Winners and losers, besides Max Fried and the Yankees. Loser, the Toronto Blue Jays. The Yankees were never going to roll over and throw their hands up after not getting Soto. There was always going to be a meaningful pivot. But the Blue Jays, each move from the Red Sox and the Yankees makes the path to a competitive 2025 seem more and more impossible for the Blue Jays. So that to me is a very, like, Yankees fans are thinking, oh no, the Blue Jays. But I think that is relevant here. Each additional move in the division just, man, feel bad for them. Other loser, the 2027 Yankees, who will be paying $27.8 million to Max Fried, $27.8 million to Carlos Rodon, $31.5 million to Max Fried, and $36 million to Gerrit Cole. That is a outrageous sum of money to be tied up in three starting pitchers of that age. Will they all age well? No. Will they all age poorly? No. Still, there's a reason that teams don't operate this way that often, and I'm fascinated to see how it turns out. Now, it doesn't negate that this was a good move and a good deal and could help the Yankees in the short term. It's just adding the risk on top of itself.
Yeah. No, I think that's totally valid. But again,
Who's a winner here for you?
Maybe I was going to say Matt Blake. I'm like, Max Fried's interesting because he's been kind of the same pitcher for so long that, and so successful for so long that, like, I do wonder what the next chapter of his career, like, is there a new pitch that unlocks more strikeouts? Or do you just be like, hey, Max, don't change a thing. We just want you to stay healthy and keep on cooking. You know, you could say that about a lot of great free agents that end up in places that they clearly got that contract because they've already been so successful. But because of the Yankees track record, I am curious because, I mean, let's be real, you know, Carlos Rodon is someone who we've seen him start to change some things, but he still hasn't really gotten quite back to that same level that we saw at his peak in San Francisco. And that's not necessarily Carlos's fault or Matt Blake's fault or anything. But when pitchers sign in new places, it's hard not to think about, even though they did get the big contract, it's not like a Frankie Montas thing where it's like, ooh, you know, we think we can really unlock something bigger. No one's necessarily saying that about Max Fried. But I am thinking about it about him. I'm thinking about it about Blake Snell, to be honest, you know, going over to the Dodgers. So that's not really a winner, but it is something I'm definitely thinking about.
And then the last winner here is me. Max Fried is an intelligent, insightful, interesting cat. And now he plays in the city where I live and I get to interact with him more and learn a lot about the sport of baseball. But enough about Fried. Let's talk about the other enormous move that we had over the last couple of days. Garrett Crochet, the big nit, changing the color of his socks, throwing them in the laundry, and they're coming out red. From Chicago to Boston, following in the path of Chris Sale. It's very difficult to not think about Chris Sale, another hard-throwing lefty that went from the White Sox to the Red Sox, but Crochet, who is probably the biggest piece on the offseason trade market, is officially on the move. Let's get into the specific details. Read out the trade for me.
The Boston Red Sox acquire left-handed pitcher Garrett Crochet in exchange for four minor league players. Catcher, Kyle Teal, Boston's first-round pick in 2023. Outfielder, Braden Montgomery, Boston's first-round pick in 2024. Infielder, Chase Mydroth, their fourth-round pick from a few years ago, and right-handed pitcher Wickelman Gonzalez. Where would you like to begin?
Wickelman is such an awesome name.
Yeah. I need him to make it. That's one, when you see prospect names like that, you're like, please become a regular part of my life. And so that will be, you know, Ethan Katz's and Brian Bannister's job to help Wickelman become part of the daily White Sox lexicon. What is Boston trying to do here, Jake? Why did they give up four prospects for Garrett Crochet? You mentioned that Chris Sale trade that they made 8 years ago, also at the winter meetings, I should add, when they gave up four prospects for Chris Sale. Why are the Red Sox doing this now?
Because the rotation stinks and they missed on Max Fried, and they either, one, don't think they're going to win the Corbin Burns race, or two, they want a double-headed monster at the top of their rotation if they pay for Burns. I think it's very easy to criticize teams who opt to trade prospects instead of spending. That being said, the Red Sox farm system is so loaded right now that capitalizing on that to acquire a player as special as Crochet makes a lot of sense. And then when you add on top of that he wants to get an extension and they will probably spend money on that, I do think that this move passes the are the Red Sox being cheap test. Now, they're adding Crochet because Crochet freaking rips. Like, he was unbelievable this season. Now, yes, the track record is pretty thin, and he is a lefty who already has a significant elbow injury under his belt, and pitchers are volatile and unpredictable. All of that is true. But the ceiling? I mean, this is one of the top five pitchers in the world if he continues to improve and can show he can carry that level of bulk. Jordan, in your mind, what are the White Sox trying to do here?
I think we talked about Garrett Crochet a lot at the deadline. We thought, okay, maybe they cash in. Then there was discussions about, okay, he knows he wants an extension if he's going to pitch deep into the season, because we knew he was going to be blasting past his previous career high in terms of innings and workload and all those things. That didn't end up happening, but for him to make it through the season healthy and to still finish with this spectacular stat line, and yeah, you look at it, it's like, okay, 3.58 ERA in 146 innings, like, what's the big deal? His like, the dominance of his fastball, I mean, he was basically doing this with two pitches, which is also amazing. This is another thing, getting back to what I was talking about with Fried. You can imagine when you look at the small sample here that there is another step for Garrett Crochet. There's another level where he could become that much better. And that is really exciting, because I understand we got an email from Adeline. She Red Sox fan. She's asking us, this seems like a ridiculous amount to give up for a guy who's done it once, or one season, 32 starts. But it's not just one good season. It was a good season that displayed something that was really, really, really special. Now, again, I'm talking about Boston, right? That's why Boston did it. Why does the White Sox do it? Because they just had one of the worst seasons in baseball history, and they need as much talent as possible at the all levels of the minor leagues, particularly on offense. And to go to a team like Boston, where you knew they desperately needed a top-end starter, and you knew there was a plethora of top-tier position player talent to choose from, this was always the team that made the most sense to line up for a deal like this. And ultimately, they were the team that was able to get a deal like this done. And when you get two potential foundational pieces in Teal and Montgomery, position players that this farm system so sorely lacks. By the way, I'm now realizing that their other best position player prospect is also named Montgomery. No relation between Colson and Braden. But they needed to cash in here now. There was no reason to risk going with Crochet with the risk associated with him into another season and hoping that he was going to fetch even more here. Boston paid a real price, and I think they did well.
For me, this deal is really simple. Garrett Crochet, who is a free agent after 2026, was not going to be a member of the next good Chicago White Sox team. I don't know if you saw, but they were just the worst team ever. And if you don't think he's going to be on the next good team, you trade the guy. And I think they got a very impressive package back for Crochet. Jordan, you are the resident prospect nerd. So let's, for the first time this winter, it's cold out there, but there's a fire burning inside Jordan's prospect hut. Please educate me on Braden Montgomery, Kyle Teal, Chase Meidroth, and Wickelman Gonzalez.
Quick, what's the weather like where you are? I have no sense. I assume it's warmer than it is here in Ohio.
It is. It's colder than I thought it was going to be, is the okay. Most important answer.
Okay, well, come and welcome. Join me here, and let me warm your soul physically and spiritually with a glowing scouting report for one Braden Montgomery. I'm going to start with Montgomery, because even though Teal is definitely the more well-known because he's been in professional baseball for an additional year, Montgomery is the key here, because this was a guy who, even going into the draft, I thought was a slam dunk top six or seven pick, ends up falling to pick 12. This is a player who has been known by scouts since he was probably 13 or 14, growing up in Mississippi. He goes to Stanford. He's a two-way player. He's throwing 98 out of the bullpen. He's this awesome power-hitting right fielder. And then he transfers to Texas A&M for his junior year, his draft year, and he just puts it all together. A switch hitter, and this is something that I'm really interested as to how he kind of develops into in pro ball, because he's always been much better from the left side. Some scouts are saying he should just quit hitting right-handed. I don't know what the plan is for Chicago specifically, but he has a classic right field profile and someone who could just be an offensive anchor, you know, just guy with the rocket arm in right field and a very, very likable personality as well. He was already on MLB Network today. He had posted a great picture on Instagram of him wearing a t-shirt that says play me or trade me, which is also really funny because he never even played a game for the Boston Red Sox as a professional. Now, part of that is just because he had a very serious ankle injury at the end of his junior season with Texas A&M. So he, again, people are going to be very confused in 10 years if Brady Montgomery becomes an all-star and they go up and they say, wait a minute, he was drafted by the Red Sox? Like, what happened here? But we have seen more trades like this in recent years of teams flipping the guys they just drafted. And this is one of the most extreme cases of that. So Montgomery absolutely has the highest ceiling. What you got on Brayden?
He has shades of Royce Lewis where he's comically kind and seemingly good at everything. Yes. Like, Montgomery had outrageous SAT scores or ACT scores. I remember coming out of high school, he's like a genius. He could probably sing. Like, he probably speaks like seven languages. Like, he's one of those kids. Yeah. And then the other thing I'll say is, take your Brayden Montgomery Red Sox jersey and hang it up right next to your Kobe Bryant Charlotte Hornets jersey. That's what I would do with that.
Yeah, that's an interesting comp. Kyle Teal. Kyle Teal is another name that I think more people are familiar with just because he's kind of been on prospect list since he was Boston's first round pick in 2023. And yeah, I mean, he's one of the best catching prospects in baseball. I mean, this is a guy coming out of University of Virginia, just got better at the plate every year that he was at UVA and then just kept on hitting all the way up to reaching AAA at the end of 2024. This isn't someone that's going to be posting like, you know, eye-popping stat lines. But as we know, the bar for catcher offense is very low, and he projects to clear it comfortably. He has an awesome arm. How good of a catcher is he really? We'll see. Where he fits in with Edgar Caro, another catching prospect that they already have, is really interesting, right? But also, that's a position where get the depth, get the players that you know you're going to build around. And that's a position that I am curious what Boston's plan is now moving forward. But Chicago is certainly in very, very good position there with Teal and Caro moving forward. I would expect we probably see both of them at some point in 2025. We'll see what that timeshare ends up looking like. Chase Mydroth, this guy's a little bit more of a truly a nerd's favorite, but also a scout's favorite. He kind of blends both things. He's got the old school, like, that's a baseball player, all those cliches that all the old school scouts would say, like, this guy is a grinder. But then also you see, like, oh, he gets on base. He's got defensive versatility. He's got, you know, the really low swing strike rate, and he's got sneaky power. Like, this guy does a lot of things well. He doesn't really elevate the ball. That's this one issue right now. He doesn't have huge power, but he does can hit the ball reasonably hard. I'm a huge fan of this guy, and I think he will absolutely, I think he can get like 300 plate appearances for the White Sox in 2025.
You know the meme of the guy on the in the Bloods and the guy in the Crips, like, holding each side of the bandana? Chase Mydroth is that, but with a baseball stat nerd holding one end of a calculator that's connected to a stopwatch, and like an old rusty scout is holding the other end.
He's definitely one of my favorite prospects. And so I'm excited to see him in the deal. And then Wilkelman Gonzalez is interesting, not just because, let me just make sure. He'll be the first Wickelman in Major League history if he does make it. But I will say, beyond that, you know, it obviously historic achievement if he is to make it to the big leagues with Chicago. He's interesting because Boston, obviously loaded with position player prospects, he was one of their higher upside pitchers. And he had a huge season in 2023, was a little bit shakier in 2024, but highest strikeout rate of all minor league pitchers with 100 innings in 2023. The command is not awesome, and so he might end up in more of a high leverage relief role. But this is a very talented arm that I have to imagine that he's honestly kind of similar to Jairo Iriarte. I maybe that's a terrible comp, but the guy they got from San Diego, where it's big stuff, what kind of role is it going to work in? We'll see. But that is a pitching prospect that Boston will miss just because they don't have that many of them. But they have Garrett Crochet now, so I think they're fine.
I think if the Red Sox had traded for Crochet before the Yankees had got Freed, it would have read a little different because of the timeline here, it feels more like a counterpunch than it does an aggressive maneuver, but that's just the chronology of it. And I do think that this helps them keep pace. It's like, okay, Yankees won, Red Sox won. What's next? As far as it goes for the White Sox, like this deal for them, I think these are good pieces to get back. I actually did go to high school with Wickelman, with a Wickelman Goldberg. So, yeah.
I would say the last thing I want to say about this trade is Boston's rotation is interesting now, because if Giolito comes back, like, remember how good Tanner Houck was for the first 3 months? I mean, he fell off really hard, and like, there's reasons why we're not as confident moving forward. And Brian Bayo, I would say, was definitely a disappointing season in 2024. But I don't know. I don't think it's that bad of a group. You know, if it's a lot of pressure on Lucas to come back and give them, you know, 180 decent innings, and Cutter Crawford has shown glimpses of being well above average. It's a lot on Giolito still, and I have to imagine they're still going to try to add to this rotation, and definitely still some questions in the bullpen. But
all right, let's take a
break. I think that there is actually still something here. It certainly looks a lot better.
The other moves that we've got,
Crochet, that we just saw.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's boot up turbo mode, because we've already gone long on this pod. Nathan Eovaldi, 3 years, $75 million with the Texas Rangers to return to the club he spent the last few years of his career with. I saw Nathan Eovaldi referred to in one article as the top of the middle of the market. I would rather be that than the bottom of the top. Eovaldi to the Rangers is interesting because he was probably the best arm on the market that didn't come with a qualifying offer attached alongside Jack Flaherty. And so the teams that just love draft picks so much were most interested in Eovaldi and Flaherty. I'm thinking about you, the Baltimore Orioles. As far as it goes for the Rangers, who employed him last year, I think this deal moves the needle a pretty decent amount. Like, DeGrom, Eovaldi, John Gray, Tyler Molly, Chad Bradford, Kumar Rocker. I know it's not Chad. I'm aware.
Oh, what if it was? That would be one hell of a rotation. Yeah, I think this speaks to, as you just mentioned, how interested more teams would be in Eovaldi, because he didn't have that QO attached. I mean, this is a hefty sum to pay to keep him in-house. Obviously, he was comfortable there, but this is a really important thing. I mean, Eovaldi has been, for a guy with many, you know, multiple arm surgeries on his resume, he just delivered an incredibly durable and quietly impressive season on an irrelevant Rangers team. And I think they realized how important he was for a lot of things that they were doing. I know he's only been there for a couple of years, but I think they viewed this as just an absolute necessity to keep. And I think they paid the price for it, and good for him. You know, at age 35, getting another deal of this size is really impressive.
So this was a great nugget. I think I saw this on MLB Trade Rumors, which is, it's only the third or fourth deal for a pitcher 35 or older that's over 3 years. Like, giving a player that old that much leash does not happen a lot. The other recent ones are DeGrom and Scherzer. And so for Eovaldi to get that length, that does certainly feel notable, but he has a very rare combination of playoff bona fides. If he gets in October, we know he's not going to pee his pants. And he's just provided a ton of bulk at this age. And so I like it. And last night, as I was prepping for the pod, I was like talking myself into Rangers winning the division. And so I know that I was very sleep deprived. Now, in order for them to do that, they need a ton of bullpen reinforcements. Like, you can look at this offense and this rotation and imagine a 92-win team pretty easily if you get healthy DeGrom and a step forward from Wyatt Langford, and the players who were underwhelming last year bounce back. Could totally happen. But this bullpen, as currently constructed, is just awful, like horrible. If you look at the Zips projections on Fangraphs, like they're projected for negative WAR as a group, as a unit. And so that is the next step for the Rangers. Any final thoughts on them before we move to Jake Berger?
Well, that's still the Rangers, and that's also part of this conversation. As you just mentioned, they need bullpen help so badly. I know they signed Jacob Webb, but like we need some impact. And they kind of nailed it last year with Kirby Yates. Maybe there's a reunion in store there, but they're going to need multiple guys to fill in there. And then obviously you're still looking at a starting rotation that has clear upside. I mean, let's not forget that Jacob DeGrom is one of the best pitchers in the world. And if he is fully healthy and all the way back, that's a huge deal. But I would have to imagine they will be still looking for starting pitching help as well. But instead, they swing a deal with the Miami Marlins to acquire Jake Berger. They send three lower level prospects to Miami. That's what Miami's looking for, as many as possible. And Texas was willing to give up a couple of young infielders in Shedrie Vargas and Maximo Acosta, as well as a young left-hander, Brian Mendoza. Acosta's probably the one to know. He was just in the fall league. He got, you know, $1.5 million when he signed as an amateur. He's someone that could maybe help in the next couple years, whereas Vargas is a much longer term thing, and so is Mendoza. But this is, again, Marlins going to Marlin. I mean, they are trying to clear as much room for young players as possible. They very well might have the youngest position player group. Like, they'll probably have the youngest team in baseball next year, I would guess. They're just trying to clear basically anybody. I know Jake Berger isn't necessarily that experienced, but he was still already way older than a lot of the guys that they were doing. And they looked at Jake Berger, and he was going to be clogging, you know, spots that they wanted to give other players playing time. And so they trade him away, and he joins a Texas lineup that, again, so much of what went wrong for them in 2024 was they just kind of ran it back, and too many of their guys either got injured or took huge steps backwards. And now we're adding a new piece. And the interesting thing about that is this is the buzz is that, oh, well, now they might trade Nate Lowe and have Jake Berger play first. Like, there is a space for both of these guys on the team, but it seems like they might rather trade Lowe and save a little bit of money and allocate that elsewhere instead of having both of them on the roster. But right now, I mean, Jake Berger, again, when he's your best hitter, you're probably the Marlins, and that's not a good sign. But if he's your fifth or sixth best hitter, like, you probably got a pretty good lineup. But whether he's their third best hitter or sixth best hitter is going to depend on a lot of how those other guys bounce back, like an Adolis Garcia, what's next for Langford, whether Josh Young can, you know, stay healthy, all those things. So definitely some things to like about this Rangers lineup, and I think Jake Berger will do quite well there. Now let's move to one more transaction here as part of Turbo Mode. And by the way, this could be its own podcast, because this trade is so these two trades that the Cleveland Guardians made a few hours after you left on Tuesday was a lot to process. The first bit of news that you saw and you shared with me, there's video of you showing me this bit of news, was the Cleveland Guardians sending three-time Gold Glove second baseman Andrés Giménez to the Toronto Blue Jays. That on its own was like, how in the world is this going to end up making sense? And then we find out that trade is in exchange for Spencer Horwitz, a young hitter for Toronto, who is a pretty good hitter and not a very good defender, as well as a prospect, Nick Mitchell. And then there was a few hours where it was like, okay, Nick Sandlin, another reliever going to Toronto. And it's like, is that the trade? Like, why does Cleveland have Spencer Horwitz and Josh Naylor and Kyle Manzardo on the same roster? Like, that seems impossible. And unless our good friend Kai Correa is going to magically teach Spencer Horwitz to be a platinum glove winner at second base, I was really confused as to why they would be getting Spencer Horwitz. And then eventually we find out that this deal is a little bit more complicated. Now, that deal does stand alone, technically, but it was all announced together when we learn that the Guardians are actually flipping Spencer Horwitz to the Pirates in exchange for three pitchers, the most important one being right-hander Luis Ortiz, and two left-handed prospects, Michael Kennedy and Josh Hartle. Now, the first thing you look at this is like, well, why didn't Pittsburgh just call Toronto and say, we want Spencer Horwitz? Like, why did this have to go through Cleveland? That was my first thought. And then you realize, well, Toronto was not interested in Luis Ortiz and Michael Kennedy and Josh Hartle. You could argue that maybe they should have been. you could say, well, Toronto, this would help your rotation too, and you would get some young pitching prospects, and their farm system is also bad. Like, maybe this Jimenez part of it could have been avoided, but ultimately Cleveland ends up facilitating. They end up being the team that is pulling these levers. And now you end up with, now you sit back and be like, what happened here?
Can I take it here? I really struggle to give a lot of craps about this trade. I'm going to simplify it in this way. Andrés Giménez is not that good of a hitter. Cleveland gave him a lot of money, especially for an organization that doesn't spend a lot of money. Getting that contract off the books for a frugal outfit makes a lot of sense. Okay. From Toronto's perspective, they need as many good baseball players as they can possibly get, and Andrés Giménez is that. From Pittsburgh's perspective, they need a first baseman. They need someone who can hit, and Spencer Horwitz seems like he definitely can hit and is under control for a good amount of time. Cleveland is just playing cute. Cleveland is using this deal to acquire a couple of prospects they think are going to be good while getting out from under this money. And they think they can backfill that value in any other number of ways. That's really all I have to say about this one. Do you have any final nuggets?
You're underrating the importance of Ortiz here. Because if they were just getting prospects, that's fine.
Yeah.
Luis Ortiz was a very good starting pitcher in the second half. And the Guardians desperately, desperately, desperately need like actual starting rotation help that they know is going to help them from opening day, right? They bring back Shane Bieber. That's awesome. But this is a big bet that Ortiz can continue to build on what he did in the second half and give them 150 plus quality innings and then be under team control for multiple seasons. Now, again, it's a short track record for Ortiz, so we'll see. That is what at least makes it seem in this market of starting pitching, this is a very convoluted, creative way to acquire a starter that they really believe in. That doesn't mean they don't deserve some scorn for getting out under this contract from Giménez, who still clearly had a place on this team and is the best second base defender that I really have ever seen. And I think a lot of people have ever seen. And I think that he will help Toronto, you know, raise the floor for Toronto. But it is I don't disagree that it's a little cutesy, but Ortiz is absolutely a massive part of this and needs to be it now becomes one of the more important pitchers for them next year as we look into the projecting the AL Central.
This is the type of trade that really does numbers on SportsCenter. Like, why did they lead with this? The three-way Guardians, Blue Jays, Pirates deal? I mean, this is an incredible example of like so up Jordan's alley. Like, you must have spent hours like searching and typing and Googling things about this. And I saw the news on this when I was on the plane and just gave it absolutely zero thought. Maybe that makes me a hater. All right, let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we'll boot up the Scobo and do the good, the bad, and the ugly. And welcome back to the end of Baseball Barbacast. Scott Boris Score Board, also known as Scobo. It's time. You love it. You need it. You want it. And here it is. Scott Boris did his annual stand-up comedy session at the winter meetings. He does two every year, one at the GM meetings, one at the winter meetings. Now, I was on an international flight for this. I have not seen any of these jokes yet. As we do with other things that happen to Scott Boris, we will make these jokes into a win, a loss, or a draw. They are all worth 1 point on the Scott Boris scoreboard, which currently sits at what, Jordan Schusterman?
10-5-3 going into this five-round edition of the Scobo, because he has not had any other clients sign, but we are going to equate his silly jokes and his actual business that he is doing as it's all worth the same amount. Okay, he delivered four more lines during this session. I was there in person and I watched him say these with my own two eyes. I watched him deliver these with in such, you know, charismatic fashion as only Scott Boris could. And you have not seen these yet. So we're going to begin. Now this is notable because some of these are about players that we've already he's already given lines on, you know, earlier in the winter, right? He talked about Corbin Burns. He said, you know, a Corbin copy of you know, an ace level season. We talked about Pete, and he had this ridiculous one about the bear market for first baseman. For Pete's sake, it's the polar opposite. Unbelievable, right? But we have four more lines here, and we're going to start with Corbin Burns. This is what he said about Corbin Burns's market. He said, for Corbin Burns, it's kind of like Elvis. He's got that Burnsing love for a number one starter. You are really feeling it today and very early this morning for me, I might add. This line is that they, sorry, it's not he's, I think it's like the market has got that Burnsing love. Now, he's referencing an Elvis Presley song from the early 70s. And it's not like, again, this is a stretch. This is like a pretty clear L for me. Do you have any thoughts?
This sucks so hard. It sucks so hard for a variety of reasons. It doesn't make any sense. It drags Elvis's name through the mud. You didn't need to do that. This is where Boris racks up the majority of his L's. Yeah. Because making money for athletes in the manner that he does is badass in a way. It's impressive. It is winning. Whereas standing up there in front of a bunch of media members and making a bunch of dad jokes like comes across as so dorky. Well, honestly, maybe just I think the fact that he's willing to do it in and of itself is a win, that he's got gaffe.
No disputing. Yeah.
Right. But the specific joke here is just an absolute freaking L. Burnsing love. And there's a lot with Corbin Burns's name, right? Like third degree burn. Like there's just a lot you can do here. So this is a loss, moving him. That is his fourth loss of the offseason.
Alex Bregman, he gave us one earlier this winter about infusion of championship blood. He's AB positive. We gave that a win at the time. This one, I'm curious your take, all right? He goes, this is the one that he gave at the winter meetings. He said, we all know what comes after AB. That is the C in champions. In Bregman's case, that is C squared, which is to say that he's won multiple championships.
And he wears
we all know what
two.
Comes after AB. That is the C in champions. Is this a win or a loss?
I think it's a draw.
Okay. I like the components of this one. I don't actually like the delivery. I think it should have been, we all know what comes after AB. That's C for championship. And then boom, done. Like, don't push your luck with the C squared because he's won multiple. I think that we get it, that he wins. It's Alex Bregman. He wins. That's his thing. I kind of like that, but he didn't stick the landing on this one. So it's a draw.
There was a way to bring it back together. So if you say he's C squared, or you could say, and he equals C squared, you don't need to be an Einstein to know that Bregman's the right. Like there was a path to a win here, but it seems like he allowed a loss at the last minute. We have one on here for Sean Mamnaya. Let me pull this up. There's a new Sean rising. It's something that teams have recognized. The demand is really something that I think is going to happen soon. So there's a new Sean rising is there's a new sun rising, but the rest of this quote doesn't seem to be a joke. It's just a boring quote.
But we think that he was arising. There's a new Sean arising. So we think he is meaning to say sun. That's what he's going for.
Sun arising. Yeah.
I truly did not. I heard this and I was like, what is he going for here? This one was tough for me to. I mean, am I being really stupid? Like sun was my first thought too, but I was like, I'm not following what we're going for.
I really don't understand. Please, you know, email us baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Tell us we're an idiot. Great comment on this, on the SNY tweet, which is, imagine if this is how he talks to people in real life.
It's not. It's only when he's got that goofy backdrop behind him. This is an L. It's also an L because it's like, maybe this is not the first time Sean Mamnaya has been a free agent. So maybe he emptied the notebook last time and I forgot what he used. But this is brutal. All right, let's get to my favorite one. They ask about Pete Alonso's market. Scott Boras says, a lot of market locomotion regarding Pete. The Polar Bear Express is rolling.
Yes, dub. Win.
Dub.
Win.
That's a fat dub. All right, so That was the
It could
presser.
Have been delivered a little better. Like, oh, the Pete's Market, it's moving. There's locomotion.
I don't know. This is an easy win. I have no edits on this one. I think Pete's given him a lot. I think Pete, I'll say this, because I think, well, I don't know, but he's not going to like speak publicly like this necessarily before. Could he like text someone, certain reporters, and deliver another line when Pete Alonso's free agency stretches into February? I would love that.
Maybe.
But we have one more, Jake, and this is the one I'm most excited to talk about. Because Scott Boras attended Juan Soto's introductory press conference at Citi Field today, which you were not at because you're in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And obviously, he got a lot of questions. Him and Juan Soto got a lot of questions about the Yankees. Oh, why didn't the Yankees get him? Oh, did they do anything wrong? What's going on? Yankees, Yankees this. Yankees that. Yankees this. Juan, what are you thinking? How could you leave the Yankees? Don't you know they won all those World Series? And this is what Scott Boras said in response to these questions. I'm sure he actually gave a real answer besides that. He said, Scott Boras, this is from Anthony DiComo. Scott Boras on the Yankees and other runners up for Soto. Quote, when you're at a wedding, you don't talk about the bridesmaids.
Lie. That's a lie. That's a fat lie. I was once at a wedding and one of the bridesmaids fainted and we all talked about it.
All right, that's an interesting example as I kind of share my take on this. Let's try and convey the thesis here. This is a different category, but what is the point that he is trying to make?
So what I think he really is saying is we are here today to talk about the Mets succeeding and Juan's day. Later down the road, I'm happy to talk about the Yankees, but not today.
Yes. And I think that sentiment of it's not their day, right? It's his day, right? And in the example that you just gave of a bridesmaid fainting, I mean, that was maybe out of their control. And then they became a little bit more of, got a little bit more attention, but that wasn't planned, right? They weren't trying to make it about them, right? Here's my issue with this. If we're really running with this analogy, it's a little problematic and strange. Because in this connection, you're implying that the bridesmaids are pursuing the groom and lost out and then still went to the wedding.
You gotta
that
watch.
That doesn't make any sense.
You gotta watch Palm Springs. Great movie. Enough of wedding talk. We're already married.
Is it a win or a loss? I think it's a draw because I think that.
I think it's a draw. I think he successfully conveyed the important thing, but the line itself is mediocre. Okay. All right. It is time for a very brief and swift good, bad, and ugla. One thing good, one thing bad, one thing ugla for the week that was. I will begin. I was not at the Juan Soto Mets press conference, but I got a text from someone, actually from Joel Sherman, who said that they're serving Dominican food for lunch at the Soto press conference. This is a big win. This is great. The Mets, these are the things that the Mets would not have done 5 years ago. Now, they would not have spent, you know, $750 million on a baseball player, yes, but they're also getting the little things right. And it just made me happy that they went the extra mile. If the Mets hadn't served Dominican food at the press conference, it wouldn't have been a bad thing. But it's just that extra little touch of care. That's a good. Good job, Mets.
My good is also related to that because it is Steve Cohen. And it is not really that recent, but it is a clip that was circulating. And I was like, that is good. It was Steve Cohen in an interview earlier this year on CNBC. And CNBC, right? So they're talking business. the interviewer asked him, Steve, you know, you want a World Series ring. How many years do you think it'll take to get there? How much will it cost? And Steve Cohen says, I don't care about the cost. And then the interviewer's like, whoa, hold on. He said, you don't think about this as a philanthropic venture, do you? And he says, I do. That is why I bought the team. That's exactly why I bought the team. I said in my original press conference, if I can make millions of people happy, how cool is that? I actually view it as a civic responsibility. What a concept. Good.
My name is Juan Soto, and I'm looking for $765 million for 100% of my services. I only want to do a deal with Lori. Okay. Jordan, what's bad from this week?
The draft lottery. The draft lottery is not bad. I'm fine with it. I think it, in some ways, is maybe kind of working to get teams to not tank for as long. We'll see. It's only the third year of the draft lottery. But we went to the draft lottery. And one of the rules in place about the draft lottery is that if you are a certain kind of team, whether if you're a revenue sharing team like the White Sox, you cannot receive if you're a revenue sharing team like the White Sox, you cannot get a lottery pick multiple years in a row. This happened to the Nationals last year. They were unable to pick in the lottery. Unfortunately for the White Sox, they lost a billion games this year and then didn't get to pick in the top 10. The A's, another team who receives revenue sharing, but they cannot pick in the lottery 3 years in a row. What is bad about this? Whether that's bad or not, you can debate amongst yourselves. What was bad was the fact that at the lottery, they still had Jed Lowry and Jim Thome sitting up there on the stage, even though they had a 0.0% chance of winning the lottery. Wow. Why did we have them up there waiting to find out if they were not going to pick in the top six, let alone top six, let alone top 10? What was that? Maybe Jim Thome was there anyway, but that just seemed so goofy. And so I'm calling it bad.
My bad also has to do with the Oakland A's. The A's X account has had their replies turned off for a while now because they are afraid of the fans getting mad at them. Now, I assume this is an edict from on high. I'm not trying to hate on the A's social media department. This is a bad right now because the A's left Oakland and they signed Luis Severino and they spent money and they're entering the next phase of their franchise's history. And yet, for whatever reason, they still have the replies turned off. Just turn them on. Let people yell at you. You left. You dumped them. They're allowed to be mad. Turn them on. It's bad. My Uglo was a winter meetings thing I saw. Before Jordan got there on day one, I was sitting in the lobby. And who came in? My second favorite Ohio resident, Terry Francona, current manager of the Cincinnati Reds, former manager of the Cleveland Guardians. And that is relevant because his suitcase had a big C on it. Not a red C, but a Guardian C. And I thought it was so freaking ugly that Terry Francona, who is now the manager of the Reds, just either didn't have another suitcase, didn't buy another suitcase, didn't want another suitcase, and packed in a Guardians branded suitcase for the winter meetings. Delightful.
We've seen versions of this before with players, right, who get traded and just keep wearing their old stuff or bring in their old bag. But yeah, I have to imagine. I mean, come on. We can't send him some new stuff. We can't. I feel like
that's great, because he can afford an away bag. Like, he can just go to Toomey or whatever and drop his card and get whatever he needs.
No, that's not the way for the baseball players. My ugla this week is the Baseball Reference Wrapped. Obviously, if you have Spotify, you know that, you know, you get all these stats about all the songs that you listen to. And Baseball Reference has done this for a few years now, and they just posted, I mean, they have a few different examples of this where it's basically a bunch of stats about what team pages got viewed, you know, the most, what team pages were viewed the most in different states. And there was just some really interesting things here, although I went back and I looked at the most recent ones, and I gotta say, it's gotten a lot less weird. If you look at their 2024 most viewed team pages and you look at the map, there's really not anything too. I'm curious if you take a look at this. I'm curious if what stands out to you. But going back and looking at, you know, the last couple of years, I mean, we had some really, really silly stuff. I mean, if you look at the 2022 map, you have stuff like the A's being the most viewed team page in New Hampshire and Washington, D.C., and Arkansas. Like, usually last year, you have stuff like the Angels being number one in Hawaii. You have the D-backs kind of creating like a snake's wall in the upper Midwest last year. But obviously this year, they're just not really on any of the most viewed states besides Arizona. There's all kinds of interesting stuff here. And I mean, I could go into this all day, but I know we're going to wrap up. But anything stand out to you about the map that you're looking at?
The number one thing is Joe Mauer being the most viewed page in Minnesota because yes, the Twins season was so disheartening that they just needed to be like, oh, remember Joe Mauer? He was great.
Yes. The one other thing that I loved was that the Yankees had, I think, 10 different states this year, including like New Mexico and Wyoming, and then even the South, like the Carolinas. But if you go back and look last year, the Carolinas and Tennessee, like it was the Braves, right? The Yankees sucked. But then this year, Florida and Carolinas and Tennessee, they're like, the Yankees. It's like, it just reminds you that people will default to the Yankees when the Yankees are good. And that was obviously rarely not the case in 2023. But a lot of fun stuff there. We love the good folks at Baseball Reference.
Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing this podcast. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. I'm going to go walk around Vietnam.
All right. You do that. Yeah. Thank you all for listening. And we will talk to you all next week.
See you.